Welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice from both the local church and the workplace. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
Notice how casual we are, Jonathan?
Huh, yeah.
I got on my sweatshirt, jeans, tennis shoes, just brought Marley in and put him in the garage. We're in my house.
Yes.
But I'm kind of excited because we got a rock star.
We do.
We got a rock star in the house with us.
We have the one and only Keith Getty, which is half of the Gettys.
Well, the first thing everyone thinks of when they think of rock star is hymn writer. So
yes.
Goodness gracious, they do. Welcome, Keith. Glad to have you here.
Honored to be here with the president himself.
Well, yeah, really big deal. And welcome to my home. You and Jonathan were gracious enough to come into the Rainer house so I could continue starting a book and finishing up a book. So thank you for doing that. Matt, we got a lot of great things to talk about in this short time. We're going to talk about why the Christmas season should be conducive to giving glory to God and reaching people for Christ, and you're going to have some recommendations of that. And y'all have got a little bit of Christmas tour about to take place.
That's right.
You and Kristen and the rest of the team. Tell us what's going to go on there.
Well, Thanksgiving has to be eaten by 1 o'clock because then we have to get ready for the bus. The bus leaves at 4.
Thanksgiving. So this is actually airing the day after Thanksgiving. So as you are traveling, this will be on the air.
Yeah, yeah. The bus leaves at 4, and we travel up. Opening night is in Hamilton, Ontario. It's a beautiful symphony hall there.
Stunning, wow.
I think possibly the best in Canada, and it's just phenomenal. And we're doing opening night there, and it's been recorded by the BBC.
Oh, good. Wow.
So it's a really...
Are they the people with the strange accents?
Yes, right. That's right, and they play different sports to you guys. They wouldn't know who Alabama are. So it's going to be a great opening night there in the symphony hall, and it's sold out. I think it's sold out in October. So it's
wow.
Been, we're really, really excited about it.
And, wow.
And then that starts. We have 18 shows. So we play ranging from the Windspear in Dallas to the Carnegie Hall in New York to finishing back home. Every tour finishes back home in Nashville. So we're finishing in the Skirmahorn.
That's going to be great. I plan on being there for that one.
Well, I'm hoping you're going to dance, actually. Oh. We were looking for someone who could be a guest Irish dancer for the night, and I figured who
Bring
better?
Me to the stage.
Who
I will,
better,
sh- I will
better
show you
than
how
an,
to dance.
Than an Alabama-born Baptist president.
Yes. Of course, it'll probably be the last day.
Yeah, it'll be the
president if I dance on the stage.
That'll be the end.
Yeah. So how long's the tour? It goes from the end of Thanksgiving till
22nd
of Christmas.
Yeah, and then 3.5 weeks.
And then you'll be home in Nashville? Or are you going?
No, we're staying in Nashville this Christmas. We are taking them. We're doing a little over New Year's. We're doing 5 days down in Seaside in Florida. Kristen's whole family are coming over, and they've never been warm at Christmas. So
thought,
well, that could be fun.
But, yeah. Wow.
But so they're coming here. Both families will be over at Carnegie Hall for the 17th because I'm turning 40. Would you believe it? I know I don't look 40. Thanks for saying.
You don't look 40.
Yeah. So
50, but, not 40.
But it's exciting this year. Irish Christmas is the first half is all about the old world. So it's music influenced by English, Scottish, Welsh, even a little bit of Spanish and French because the Celtic nations there, the flamenco and the French, influencing the first half. And the second half is more the new world. So it's more Americana, bluegrass, folk, and then with little bits of jazz influence and then gospel at the end. So it's a really exciting show. Ricky Skaggs is guesting at a few of the shows, and a few other people are making star appearances along the way. So it's a really...
You obviously got that up your sleeve. You're not going to reveal that at
well,
this point.
Some I can, some I can't. But we got a choir in each city. We got strings in most cities. And then we've got our wonderful Irish bluegrass band of four people who think Irish music is better and four who think American music is better.
That will be neat.
They juke it out on stage.
That will be neat. Information on tickets, if anybody is in any near location to these?
I think gettymusic.com would be the central place to go, but each of the cities, if you know there's a concert hall you want to go to, you can go direct to the concert hall. So.
Oh, that'll be great. So
I think there's five shows. I've still got tickets left, so I think there's five.
Oh, wow.
I think the rest are sold
fast.
Out. Yeah, yeah.
This is going to be great. I think that we're going to have a dozen Rainers at Skirmahorn.
A dozen? Is there a collective word for that? Like a
chaos?
Maybe that's a competition.
A chaos
maybe that's a competition. A gaggle of Rainers are... We've been known to be called a rubble of rainers. I like that.
Yeah,
yeah. Make it stick.
That could be a competition. That could be a thing.
So. I look forward to that. And you know what a big fan I am of the Gettys. I've written about them on the blog,
and now we have them on the podcast.
I think that what you and Kristen and your team have done has revolutionized hymnody and churches, music all across the world. So I was a fan of you before I knew you, and once I got to know you, I'm not quite as much of a fan.
You have no idea what an anticlimax I've been to so many people.
Oh, it's fun having you here. It is absolutely fun. Well, we also want to talk about, we're headed into the holiday season. Indeed, as those are listening to this podcast, if they're listening to it on the Friday after Thanksgiving, we're in the holiday season. And we're going to talk about some things that you recommend for churches and for reaching people and proclaiming the gospel, being gospel-centered. And you and I and Jonathan recently had lunch, and you went over those like a machine. And we were just saying, oh, we got to get that on a podcast. So, Jonathan, I know that you've got those, and you can begin to lead.
Well, Jonathan can do it.
Well, I know Jonathan can do it, but
he's got a good Irish accent
as well, we want an audience for this, so we're going to have you do it, Keith.
Yeah, but you mentioned the five things that churches can do not to waste Christmas.
Yeah. I think I would start first of all by saying, you know, in your leadership program, you get a lot of very multi-talented people. The Bible talks about one talent, four talent, five talent people. I should say from the heart, we really are one talent people in that we write hymns. That's what we do. And
we write
these hymns, and so everything is an expression out of that. It is the quality of the song and the belief in songs. And as we've traveled around doing these hymn tours each fall, the number one questions pastors are having to end afterwards is, how do we handle Christmas? Because they've got a lot of comments about Christmas. Some of them aren't very Baptist and polite, but pretty much nobody says it's the most wonderful time of the year. Mm. And so we began to think about it and think, you know, what a tragedy, because as a hymn writer, I didn't intend to write Christmas music, but the doors that have opened for us at Christmas have been unparalleled to other things, really. And it is such an important point. Number one, because there are more people in our churches at Christmas who are yet to believe than any other time of the year.
That is so true.
And in some churches, there are more people who are yet to believe than every other time of the year.
That is so true.
And so I think the number one thing we've been encouraging music directors as we've gone along and pastors is to sing the gospel at Christmas. Every service, we should sing the gospel. Every service, in my opinion, should have the contours of the gospel going through the service. But at Christmas, it's especially important because of these people, because of the outsiders, that they should, through our songs, be able to understand the gospel. I love Christmas carols. The first Sunday in Advent, which is, you know, going to be happening mm-hmm. this Sunday, you know, we think of "Come, thou long expected Jesus, born to set thy people free from our fears and sins, release us, let us find our rest." And he, but when Wesley was talking about rest, he was talking about the Jewish people longing that for that moment, weeping, wailing for that moment that the Messiah would come. And yet, how many people do we know in our families, in our streets, in our offices, who are people who are restless at Christmas? You know, how many people can we say about a little town of Bethlehem, "So God imparts to human hearts the blessings of his heaven. No ear may hear his coming. But in this world of sin, where meek souls will receive him, still the dear Christ enters." And how many people this Christmas in our churches are living with past mistakes, with repeated mistakes? How many people feel it's too late for them or God still can't forgive them? These Christmas carols are incredible for doing that. And so the second thing we've encouraged pastors to do is build your Christmas around carols. Guys keep coming up to us and going, "How do we keep being different at Christmas?" And we're trying to say respectfully, start by being the same.
That's great. I mean?
Start by doing the great carols. They're the crossover music of our generation. The three of us are living here talking in Nashville, where all the Christian music companies are trying to do crossover music. And what that means is like one song on a billboard for 1 week. You know, or somebody getting an appearance in a late night chat show, or getting a cut in a movie. And that's really not crossover culture. That's not really changing culture to a strong degree. These Christmas carols have influenced Charles Dickens novels. They've influenced education for centuries. They've influenced musical education. They've influenced culture at every level. Some of them have appeared in hundreds of movies, not one movie. you know. And so these carols have actually influenced. So this is a rich heritage that we have. So dip back into the traditional carol Jesus. What we are finding out is that no two people have the same choices of music. Music does not appeal to everyone, but the majority of unchurched and the majority of church, the majority of old and the majority of young want to sing great carols. So let's really immerse ourselves in those great carols at Christmas and then sprinkle a little bit of innovation on top as we go.
I think I've just heard a deep sigh of relief by pastors, worship leaders, and others who are, what can I do differently? Mm-hmm.
We got to stand out.
Yeah, and he's saying, I love it. The big crossover is the traditional of what we've done for so long, and that sounds great.
At so many levels, from the memories they bring back to the memories they establish for the future. Mm. You know, to be progressive, I think it was both Stravinsky and C.S. Lewis have incredible things to say about to be actually progressive means to be regressive. It means to learn from the past as art forms. And you can only really be truly progressive and speak into the future rather than have a yelp at the present, but actually speak into the future by understanding the art forms of the past. And so I think that's important. I think the third thing we're encouraging churches to do is to get serious about our congregational singing. As you know, we've written a lot on this subject and spoken a lot on it. But the holy act of congregational singing is that we were with friends, we've told this story many times, who said, what's the most moving service you've been in recently? And they speak at many big events. And they said, it was sitting around the table, like the table the three of us are at here, with believers from North Vietnam, whispering hymns in rhythm.
Wow.
For the joy of being together.
Wow.
Because when we as believers get together, the joy of singing is the one infinitesimally small foretaste of heaven that each of us have. You know, so let's make our congregational singing, let's make that what is a witness. Every revival in history, from the Old Testament to the New Testament to every century since, congregational singing has been a witness. So let's make sure our churches are excited about congregational singing, are committed to it. Let's make sure when unbelievers see these incredible, almost unbelievable words to their ears, that they're not looking at believers playing with their phones and whispering to their wives and doing something else. Let's make sure people are excited about it. And they're the best songs to sing. The music is good. Yeah. So I think it can really help our church.
I mean, that's the thing. They're so familiar that it almost encourages congregational singing because you've heard them all your life.
Yeah, that's right. And the witness of that is both powerful and is winsome and warming to people. But people not caring about it is actually scandalous. Mm. You know, people who claim to be believers and being tepid to it or being distracted should be an embarrassment to us. So anyway, one of the things we're talking to musicians about a lot is trying to encourage them to then, after you have those basics in place, is to try new things. In 2008, I wrote a song called By Faith, which is sung quite a lot. But for 18 months after, I didn't write a single other song. Mm. And so my wife said to me, and I was writing almost every day, which just shows you how awful I am at this whole process.
So when you say you were not composing, that means you were not selecting any of your composition. Is that
none
correct?
None of them were very good, is what I was saying. I was trying every day, but they were rubbish.
Your rejects would be better than most of best.
Yeah, well, my wife and I said, let's try something different. So we started to write music for her to sing as a solo. We started to write choral music, which is my background. Then we got pregnant, and we started to write songs for children and lullabies and instrumental arrangements and instrumental music and do different kinds of music. And it reignited our creative spark. So we're encouraging musicians, you know, contemporary musicians. So much of contemporary music at the minute is folk influenced. Well, the best folk melodies are carols. Mm. You know, our friends are classical musicians. Maybe write children's music. Try something a little different with your choirs. You know, become more innovative. This is the time. I was in a conference call with one of the pops orchestras in America. People involved in one of the pops orchestras, and they were talking about how. Thinking innovatively with orchestras. Orchestras are struggling at the minute, but at Christmas you can do chestnuts roasting on an open fire, you can do Copland's Hoedown, you can do Brahms, you can do children singing, all in the one concert, and people don't mind, whereas the rest of the year that's terrible. It's unacceptable. Yeah. So I think in our churches we can be more innovative. And I think at the minute, if you go into an average church in America, that the breadth of music is far less broad than what is on people's iPhones, than what is in people's palette of listening.
Oh yeah.
In other words, our music in our churches is just boring.
Wow.
Stop boring people. Stop boring people by trying to sound like the next church down the street or like whatever was in Christian radio yesterday. But Christmas gives us a chance. People are ready for that. But I think the biggest thing of all is we're also trying to tell people that once you have those basics in place, let's use Christmas to turn music into a a bona fide ministry. Let's say there are nine, for every one car that drives in the building, there are 999 driving past. Mm-hmm. What are we doing about the 999? So let's look out, let's get with our leadership and say, how are you reaching out over Christmas, and how can music be a part of that? So it might be going to someone in the church who's got a nice house, has a house party for 60 people. We go and play some music at it. It might be we go to the mall. It might be we go to old people's home, we go into the schools and educations. It might be we book a concert for 2 years' time and try and upgrade our show to get into the city centers again. But let's use Christmas while our culture still allows it, to get our music flooding the streets, because that's where carols came. Carols were the rebel songs. Carols were the first people to sing. Carols were the first pieces that were sung in Britain that sang the gospel in the vernacular when the Catholic Church banned it. Carols were the first pieces that were sung and danced with music when the Puritans banned music.
Wow.
So they
getting this history lesson.
Yeah, they were the rebel song.
Are we recording this?
Yeah.
they were the rebel songs, but they were songs which brought radical Christian living. And without being a doomsday forecaster, there is evidence to suggest that in the next 2 to 3 decades, there will be less and less opportunities to be in concert halls and theaters, to be on streets, to be in whatever schools still allow us to go there, to be in government groups like military bases where there's a chance to still go do these things. So let's sit down with our leadership and say, how do we bring our music outside of our church? Because if we do that, and we all get a taste for that, and the young people and the innovators and the mass of people in the church who are into evangelism start to see musicians looking outwards as to how their gifts can be used, I think then leading into next year and leading into the next 3 years, I think the vision will change for what we can do in our churches.
Hey, let's get real practical with this, now that this has not been practical, but let's role play for just a moment. Let's assume that I am a pastor in some church in Nashville, Church of Nashville, and Jonathan is a worship leader with his robust, beautiful voice and all of his musical abilities.
Thanks. And stunning good looks as well. He's got the whole package, really.
To each his own, Keith.
Yeah.
And so here we are, and we just listened to this podcast from Keith Getty on making Christmas more powerful, to reach people with the gospel and to get the gospel more powerfully sung in our congregations. And Jonathan is here as a worship leader. I'm here as a pastor. Where do I begin? What's a good first step? I mean, just
for Christmas.
Yeah, for Christmas.
Well, I think the highest call for musicians in churches is to accompany the congregation singing. So I mean, as I said, I think the first thing is to get great songs from the history of our Christian churches that tell of the gospel, and to learn to put those songs in, and to help our congregations sing those well. And so if you've got great traditional carols that sing the gospel and you get your congregation singing well, that is still, from a statistical leadership guy's point of view, that is still the most powerful evangelistic witness that your church will have this Christmas. Numbers 4 and 5 are for the bigger churches, or the churches who feel they're beyond that, and saying, how can we be a bit more creative with music? How can we be a bit more creative in thinking outside of the box? But I think we want to get the first thing straight. And I say that from a serious point of view, because as we've traveled over the last 8 years, some of the worst singing has been in some of the biggest churches.
Really?
Some of the worst singing has been in the churches with the biggest production. And music is a good gift, but ultimately we're trying to help our congregation sing. That is part of their sanctified experience. That is part of their obedience. That is part of their joy and delight, is to get together as a body of people and sing on a Sunday. And if the music or the performance or the production at the front is being discussed more than the congregational singing, then that, I believe, actually is actually idolatrous.
Wow, that's good.
We talked earlier about the familiarity of Christmas carols. How do we guard against it becoming trite and repetitive?
Yeah, I don't worry too much about that. In that, I mean, I just, on the way down, I live in Hillsborough Village in Nashville. You guys live here, so it's a 25-minute drive. I listened to Joy to the World 4 times on the way down here, just to think of that, just to think of the words, as like, Joy to the World, the Lord has come, let earth receive her King, and just letting those words. So I think beautiful art of all kinds, whether it's a classic movie or whether it's a great painting, I think those things all have a level that is worth being repeated. They're worth repeating because they're worth being repeated. I think secondly, we as pastors and music guys can take a lead in that. So pastors can draw lines out, like the idea of the rocks and all those kind of things in Joy to the World. The very fabric of nature is spilt that it is dying to praise the name of Jesus. The Bible says that even the rocks and the hills could cry out that Jesus is Lord. This is not a philosophy. This is not a kind of a Western option on morals. Do you know what I mean? This is actually the very fabric of the universe that we were created. So he can pick pastors can pick out lines to encourage people to actually rethink about the beauty and the wonder of the gospel. I think as musicians, it's always worth trying to do our own kind of slight rearrangements of the musical arrangement. Don't necessarily. I wouldn't change the melody, to be honest. Yeah. You can't write better melodies than those melodies, but. There are infinite options. You know, if you're a classical musician, add brass, add strings, add different things, you know, to make it that way. If you're more of a contemporary musician, look at some of the most phenomenal folk arrangements of these carols, because mm-hmm. they're nearly, even the ones that are arranged classically are actually mostly folk tunes.
Yeah.
You know, so they, you know, nearly all the great folk musicians over the years from right across the board have done versions of these carols. So I think we want to always be, we always want to do something fresh, but we have a great product to start with. Mm-hmm. It's like my friends in sales, you know, who say, you know, it's easier to sell something that's worth selling.
Yeah,
that's good.
So in my professional musical opinion, just add cello. That's a winner.
Thanks. Jonathan, that was worth the podcast.
I mean, cello, piano, you're good to go.
Okay. Well, you heard it from Jonathan.
That's just
Keith.
It's the Jonathan Way. That could be his first book. Jonathan Way. The big picture of a cello. That's all it is. Just a sparse, an empty room with a cello.
All right. One other topic before we go, and this one will open up a can of worms that could go on forever. But the worship wars, are they waning? Are they still pervasive? Any words of wisdom for all of these church leaders who will contact me and ask me questions about that? And if I'm catching you off guard, I apologize.
No, I mean, I've never been involved in the worship wars. We're hymn writers who write modern hymns for the church. Number one, we're trying to write hymns that teach God's people the truths of God, the truths of the Bible, the truths of the gospel. And then we want to write hymns that are rich in that way. Secondly, we want to write hymns that are written for an artist called the congregation. So we're not writing for a contemporary person or a young person. We're writing melodies that large amounts of people can sing together quickly. And thirdly, we're trying to write in a timeless artistic fashion. So we work to historical theology. We work to classic poetry. We work with classical musical genre. We work with traditional folk music melodies. And we try to write. So what we're writing doesn't sound like 2014 pop music, but the great thing is that in 2018, it doesn't sound out of date either. Sound like what they are. So we've concentrated in doing that and encouraging people. I do think as a general, I think we need to be serving our congregations with those three things. If we are really trying to build our congregation up in their knowledge of God and through the hymns they sing, because that's how God's people have learned their faith from the Psalms, but even since before this, from the Psalms onwards, God's people have learned their faith through what they sing. Martin Luther took a period of time out of his life at the height of all the controversies to actually plan a collection of chorales, because he said, if God's people do not have the hymns to sing, they will not have the substance of faith to believe. And there's actually interesting articles. There's actually interesting articles where his rivals tried to stop the hymns traveling. They let him, they were happy for him to live, but they tried to stop the hymns traveling because of the damage the hymns did. So God's people, if you live in a generation where people think the songs that the children sang two centuries ago are now too deep for them to sing, which is what we're living in, that's a very serious problem. So we want deep believers. The next generation, whether it's the challenges of fundamentalist secularism or fundamentalist atheism, militant atheism or fundamentalist Islam or whatever the challenges are, one thing is for sure, our children and grandchildren are going to have a harder time being Christians than we had. And so we want to build up deep believers. So if that's the top thing, if helping our congregation sing well is the second thing, and thus when songs don't sing well, stop putting them through the misery of singing them. And thirdly, I do think we need to have songs we can travel through life with. I think whether it's 40% of what we sing or 80% of what we sing, you and your parents and your parents' parents were deeper believers for the fact that they had songs they carried with them through life. At the moment, the average person my age is not going to have songs that they carry with them through life when they turn 60.
Wow.
Because we don't sing, because the vast majority of churches are only singing songs that are 5-year-old songs. Well, that has some serious issues for spiritual formation for the next generation. So I think hold those as the main things, and then serve your congregation. But I don't care if a song was written yesterday or in the 5th century.
That's good. You know, the first time, as we wrap this up, the first time that I really read anything about you and Kristen and your team was in a Christianity Today large feature article. I mean, it was like the two of you were, the photos of you two just stood out almost full page.
Is that because I was like overweight?
I don't recall that, Keith. and the impression I came away with before I ever met you is that you're an ancient radical, and that I say that in the best sense of the word. You're bringing back the best of the past and bringing it to the contemporary present, and it's a revolution that is taking place, and it's an old revolution, but we in the church owe much to the Gettys, and we're very, very grateful for you. So thank you very much for being here, and thank you for a great podcast.
This week's podcast has been brought to you by the Gettys Christmas Tour, Joy and Irish Christmas. You can find out more information about the Christmas Tour and tour dates at gettymusic.com. That'll do it for this week's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts?
Well, Keith, you've honored me by coming into my home, so thank you for doing that. You've let me continue to write on a book that's a little close on its due date, and you've richly, richly blessed us with what you have said. And even though this podcast will go out on one day, I have a feeling it's going to be downloaded many, many times for years to come. You're a blessing. I promise I'm going to be praying for you, Kristen, and the whole team on the tour. And I'll look forward to seeing you when you return to Nashville to the Skirmahorn. So thanks, Keith.
Have you seen there? Put on your dancing shoes, Tom.
I'll be there. I've got my Alabama tennis shoes ready to go.
Thanks for joining us this week on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us online at tomrainer.com.